terrible empty feeling is in your stomach. There are goosebumps spreading all across your skin. And that familiar feeling of fearful anticipation is beginning to wash over you as you prepare to hear campfire stories. Hello, listeners.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah. Grab a spot by the fire.
Grab a beer.
Yeah, get you a beer out of the cooler, because we have yet another campfire story to tell you.
Yeah, this one is pretty exciting. So, as you guys know, that we've basically made this a competition at this point in telling stories, and I thought to stick with the older stories, and this one is definitely. Definitely one of my more spooky favorites.
All right, well, let's take a listen.
Yep.
Russian researchers in the late 1940s kept five people awake for 15 days using an experimental gas-based stimulant. They were kept in a sealed environment to carefully monitor their oxygen intake so the gas didn't kill them, since it was toxic in high concentrations. This was before closed-circuit cameras, so they had only microphones and 5-inch thick glass, portholes-sized windows, into the chamber to monitor them. The chamber was stocked with books, cots to sleep on but no bedding, running water and toilet, and enough dried food to last all five for a month. The test subjects were political prisoners deemed enemies of the state during World War II. Everything was fine for the first 5 days. The subjects hardly complained, having been promised falsely that they would be freed if they submitted to the test and did not sleep for 30 days. Their conversations and activities were monitored, and it was noted that they continued to talk about increasingly traumatic incidents in their past, and the general tone of their conversations took on a darker aspect after the fourth day. After 5 days, they started to complain about the circumstances and events that led them to where they were and started to demonstrate severe paranoia. They stopped talking to each other and began alternately whispering with microphones and one-way mirror portholes. Oddly, they all seemed to think that they could win the trust of the experimenters by turning over their comrades, the other subjects in captivity with them as well. At first, the researchers suspected this was an effect of the gas itself. After 9 days, the first of them started screaming. He ran the length of the chamber, repeatedly yelling at the top of his lungs for 3 hours straight. He continued attempting to scream, but was only able to produce occasional squeaks. The researchers postulated that he had physically torn his vocal cords. The surprising thing about this behavior is how the other captives reacted to it. Or rather, didn't react to it. They continued whispering to the microphones until the second of the captives started to scream. The two non-screaming captives took the books apart, smeared page after page with their own feces, and pasted them calmly over the glass portholes. The screaming promptly stopped. So did the whispering to the microphones. After 3 more days passed, the researchers checked the microphones hourly to make sure they were working, since they thought it was impossible that no sound could be coming with 5 people inside. The oxygen consumption in the chamber indicated that all 5 must still be alive. In fact, it was the amount of oxygen 5 people would consume at a very heavy level of strenuous exercise. On the morning of the 14th day, the researchers did something they said they would not do to get a reaction from the captives. They used the intercom inside the chamber. Hoping to provoke any response from the captives, they were afraid were either dead or vegetables. They announced, "We are opening the chamber to test the microphones. Step away from the door and lie flat on the floor or you will be shot. Compliance will earn you your immediate freedom." To their surprise, they heard a single phrase in a calm voice response, "We no longer want to be freed." Debate broke out among the researchers and the military forces funding the research. Unable to provoke any more response using the intercom, it was finally decided to open the chamber at midnight on the 15th day. The chamber was flushed with the stimulant gas and filled with fresh air, and immediately voices from the microphones began to object. Three different voices began begging, as if pleading, for the life of loved ones to turn the gas back on. The chamber was opened and soldiers sent in to retrieve the test subjects. They began to scream louder than ever, and so did the soldiers when they saw what was inside. Four of the five subjects were still alive. The food rations past day five had not been so much as touched. There were chunks of meat from the dead test subjects' thighs and chest stuffed into the drain in the center of the chamber, blocking the drain and allowing 4 inches of water to accumulate on the floor. Precisely how much of the water on the floor was actually blood was never determined. All four surviving test subjects also had large portions of muscle and skin torn away from their bodies. The destruction of flesh and exposed bone on their fingertips indicated the wounds were inflicted by hand, not with teeth, as the researchers initially thought. Closer examination of the position and angles of the wounds indicated that most of them, if not all of them, were self-inflicted. The abdominal organs below the ribcage of all four test subjects had been removed, while the heart, lungs, and diaphragm remained in place. The skin and most of the muscles attached to the ribs had been ripped off, exposing the lungs through the ribcage. All the blood vessels and organs remained intact. They had just been taken out and laid on the floor, fanning out around the effervescent but still living bodies of the subjects. The digestive tract of all four could be seen to be working, digesting food. It quickly became apparent that what they were digesting was their own flesh, that they had ripped off and eaten over the course of the days. Most of the soldiers were Russian special operatives at the facility, but still, many refused to return to the chamber to remove the test subjects. They continued to scream to be left in the chamber and alternately begged and demanded that the gas be turned back on, lest they fall asleep. To everyone's surprise, the test subjects put up a fierce fight in the process of being removed from the chamber. One of the Russian soldiers died from having his throat ripped out. Another was gravely injured by having his testicles ripped off, and an artery in his leg severed by one of the subjects' teeth. Another five of the soldiers lost their lives, if you count ones that committed suicide in the weeks following the incident. In the struggle, of one of the four living subjects had his spleen ruptured, and he bled out almost immediately. The medical researchers attempted to sedate him, but his proved impossible. He was injected with more than 10 times the human dose of a morphine derivative and still fought like a concerned animal, breaking the ribs and arm of one doctor, and when the heart was seen to beat for a full 2 minutes after he had bled out, to the point there was no more air in his vascular system than blood, it began to become an issue. Even after it stopped, he continued to scream and flail for another 3 minutes, struggling to attack anyone in reach, and just repeating the word, "more," over and over, weaker and weaker, until he finally fell silent. The surviving three test subjects were heavily restrained and moved to a medical facility, the two with intact vocal cords continuously begging for the gas demanded to be kept awake. The most injured of the three was taken to the only surgical operating room that the facility had. In the process of preparing the subject to have his organs placed back within his body, it was found that he was effectively immune to the sedative they had given him to prepare him for the surgery. He fought furiously against his restraints when the anesthetic gas was brought out to put him under. He managed to tear most of the way through a 4-inch wide leather strap on one wrist. It took only a little more anesthetic than normal to put him under, and the instant his eyelids fluttered and closed, his heart stopped. In the autopsy of the test subject that died on the operating table, it was found that his blood had tripled the normal level of oxygen. His muscles that were still attached to his skeleton were badly torn, and he had broken 9 bones in his struggle not to be subdued. Most of them were from the force his own muscles had exerted on them. The second survivor had been the first of the group of five to start screaming. His vocal cords destroyed, he was unable to beg or object to the surgery, and he only reacted by shaking his head violently in disapproval. When the anesthetic gas was brought near him, he shook his head yes when someone suggested reluctantly they tried the surgery without anesthetic and did not retract for the entire 6 hours, the procedure of replacing his abdominal organs and attempting to cover them with what was remained of his skin. The surgeon presiding stated repeatedly that it should be medically possible for the patient to still be alive. One terrified nurse assisting the surgery stated that she had seen the patient's mouth curl into a smile several times whenever his gas met hers. When the surgery ended, the subject looked at the surgeon and began to wheeze loudly, attempting to talk while struggling. Assuming this must be something of drastic importance, the surgeon had a pen and pad fetched to the patient so he could write his message. It was simple. Keep cutting. The other two test subjects were given the same surgery, both without the anesthetic as well. Although they had to be injected with a paralytic for the duration of the operation, the surgeon found it impossible to perform the operation while the patients laughed continuously. Once paralyzed, the subjects could only follow the attending researchers with their eyes. The paralytic cleared their system in an abnormally short period of time, and they were soon trying to escape their bonds. The moment they could speak, they were again asking for the stimulant gas. The researchers tried asking why they had injured themselves, why they had ripped out their own guts, and why they wanted to be in the gas chamber again. Only one response was given.
I must remain awake.
All three test subjects' restraints were reinforced, and they were placed back into the chamber awaiting determination as to what should be done with them. The researchers, facing the wrath of their military benefactors for having failed the stated goals of their project, considered euthanizing the surviving subjects. The commanding officer, an ex-KGB, instead saw potential and wanted to see what would happen if they were put back on the gas. The researchers strongly objected, but were overruled. In preparation for being sealed in the chamber again, the subjects were connected to the EEG monitors and had their restraints padded for long-term confinement. To everyone's surprise, all three stopped struggling the moment it was let slip. They were going back on the gas. It was obvious that at this point, all three were put under and up against a great struggle to stay awake. One of the subjects that could speak was humming loudly, and continuously the mute subject was straining his legs against the leather bonds with all his might. First left, then right, then left again, for something to focus on. The remaining subject was holding his head off his pillow and blinking rapidly. Having been the first to be wired for the EEG, most of the researchers were monitoring his brainwaves in surprise. They were normal, most of the time, but sometimes flatlined inexplicably. It looked as if that he had repeatedly suffered from brain death before returning to the normal. As they focused on paper scrolling out of the brainwave monitor, only one nurse saw his eyes slip shut as the same moment his head hit the pillow. His brainwaves immediately changed to that of deep sleep, then flatlined for the last time, as his heart simultaneously stopped. The only remaining test subject that could speak started screaming to be sealed in now. His brainwaves showed the same flatlines as one who had just died from falling asleep. The commander gave the order to seal the chamber with both subjects inside, as well as three researchers. One of the named three immediately drew his gun and shot the commander point blank between the eyes, then turned the gun on the mute subject and blew his brains out as well. He pointed his gun at the remaining subject still restrained to a bed, as the remaining members of the medical and research team fled the room.
"I won't be locked in here with these things, not with you," he screamed as the man strapped to the table.
"What are you?" he demanded. "I must know."
The subject smiled.
"Have you forgotten so easily?"
the subject asked.
"We are you. We are the madness that lurks within you all, begging to be free at every moment in your deepest animal mind. We are what you hide from in your beds every night. We are what you sedate into silence and paralysis when you go to the nocturnal haven where we cannot tread."
The researcher paused, then aimed at the subject's heart and fired. The EEG flatlined as the subject weakly choked out.
"So nearly free."
All right.
Not bad,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, that's, I'll admit, pretty good. Pretty spooky.
Pretty fucking spooky.
Yeah.
I'm proud of that one.
No, that is good. And I like that we seem to be having a theme of things dating back to World War II.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was greatest generation / scariest generation.
Yeah. it's got me wondering now if there's something special in particular about that era and, like, not just the war and how that was horrible, but if, like, maybe the horribleness of the war made so many weird, spooky things happen?
Well, that very well could be. I mean, you got to think about the time frame. It was very traumatizing, you know, seeing, you know, the Jewish community being basically slaughtered and, you know, the Russians fighting for their, you know, their life and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think that's also what kind of makes this even more creepy is, so this story was actually proven to be false. So this is not an actual, like, story, but it did branch off from a legend that Stalin and his troops used to actually tell each other to not break off of communism and not break off, you know, you have to defend Stalin, you have to do this, or these demons are going to come for you type deal. So I always thought that was really neat that, you know, the story has literally evolved over the last, like, 100-some years into this. And I can imagine it probably was a little bit scarier back then.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, like, back then it was just a great story.
Yeah. This definitely felt like a mellowed-down version of it, but it got the point across, and it definitely was a lot creepier. Like, the story I had written now was probably, like, 30 minutes long, but I cut it down by a few days here and there just to, you know, get the point across.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, and my numbers could be wrong here, but I believe, like, the world record for staying awake is 11 days.
Yep.
And, like, there's a few other more, like, less proven anecdotal cases of people lasting a little bit longer. So the going 15 days didn't seem necessarily impossible to me, but it seemed bizarre.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. And, you know, back then, it's a lot easier to tell prisoners, hey, like, you know, we'll let you go if you actually do this. And, you know, it seems harmless enough, but at the same time, like, I feel like they would have taken care of them a lot sooner than that. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Because, like, you said something in the beginning of the story about them being like prisoners, right? Like prisoners of war or something.
They were deemed prisoner, like issues to the war, basically. And so, you know, they were basically going to be like lifetime jailmates. So I think, well, in my original assessment was like maybe they didn't tell them completely what they'd be doing. They just said, we're going to be having you stay awake for like almost 30 days.
Yeah.
But, and I think that's kind of what makes that creepy too, because it kind of plays into like sleep paralysis.
A little bit, yeah.
Like that. because, you know, people see weird shit when they enter this actual, like, form of sleep. It's right before EDM and all that stuff. Or, I'm sorry, REM, not EDM. That's yeah. Music.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think that that makes it sound a little bit more real, and it probably should, only because, like, there are instances of making things actually more real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
But no, it's conceivable enough, and for some reason, maybe just because of me and who I am, but my favorite part of the story is where they were first noticing that the prisoners were going off the deep end because they were pasting newspapers to the glass with their poop.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just everything yeah, about and, that little scenario just made me laugh.
Oh, yeah, eating the first guy and, like, shoving his innards in the drain and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, which, you know, it's also interesting to think about, too, because, you know, you mix gas and water, and then you create condensation and everything else in the air in that room. So, you know, what was mixing with that gas, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To make them go even further. But, and again, like I said, the story was proven to be not real, obviously, because there's no physical way you could survive.
Yeah, you...
being torn to pieces, basically.
You killed, like, everything I had to say by just coming out and saying that in the beginning, because I'm like, let me tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, never mind. He already said he's wrong.
Yep. No, I had actually... Well, and it's funny, too, because I consider this the Blair Witch Project theory.
Mm-hmm.
So I had actually heard this story probably, like, 3 or 4 years ago, and I thought with my life that this was real, but this just was not too long ago proven to be not correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it shattered me when I was finished doing the recording and everything else too, when I was doing more research on it. But it still makes for a great, great story. It's one of those, like, I guess what you consider a creepypasta.
Uh-huh.
And, if you haven't actually listened to those are fun too. So a lot of creepy stories.
Well, I never actually heard of it, so
yeah.
I was waiting for you to explain what creepypasta was. I was like, I don't know what that is, but it sounds like a cool
thing.
Oh, sorry,
I thought you did. Yeah, no. So creepypasta is a collection of both fiction and nonfiction horror stories that people have come up with or have lived through and things like that. One of them actually includes the Dybbuk box.
Oh,
so
nice.
That's, you know, from the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And The stories are anywhere from very mild to outrageous as far as, like, their horror and what they deal with and things like this. This story actually came in kind of mild compared to a lot of the other stories I read on there.
Sure.
So, but yeah, it's basically all horror story. A lot of it is, like, deep web stuff. They had a lot of other World War II stories and things like that, too. So...
Well, I love me some good deep web, so I'm going to have to check this out.
Oh, absolutely. Just don't get caught by a hacker.
Do I want to know?
Well, yeah. I mean, literally, hackers live on the deep web.
Yeah.
And depending on if you go to certain websites, you know, that basically gives them a open access Trojan.
I thought you, like, there was, like, a specific story involving them that, like, you had in mind when you said that.
Oh, hell no.
Okay.
I'm just talking about real-life hackers.
Oh, yeah. No. Those guys are bad.
So, yes, they are.
But, yeah, see, that's the weird thing. Like, I have a couple, too, that, like, are either already disproven or just so clearly disprovable it doesn't really matter. Like, coming
yeah,
up
they make for
this
good
season.
Stories.
Yeah, but they make for good stories, so clearly we have to tell them. The only problem is it really just kind of... does not do much for this segment of the show when we have these stories.
Yeah. So, and like I said, we'll be probably going up and up and up as far as, like, creep factor.
Yeah.
But I think this was a good segue to, now we've jumped from spirits of the dead to demons of the dead, you know,
yeah,
demons. And now we're talking about furthering the horrors of, like, demons and ghosts and psychological horror.
Well, that's more or less the great thing about this story, I almost said this case, but clearly it's not a real case.
Right.
But is that it's the scary thing that is happening in the story is just people.
Right.
You know, like there's not really a demon or anything going on. It's just how far down the rabbit hole can a simple person go?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really creates the horror, and that's the kind of thing I really get into. I love that.
Oh, absolutely. Humans themselves are extremely scary.
Yes.
There's always been the saying that you don't mess with the living.
Mm-hmm.
People mess with the dead all the time, obviously, trying to talk to them on the other world and all that other stuff. But the one thing is you just don't mess with the dead or the living.
Yeah.
Because you never know what that guy's going to do or that girl's going to do. You know, you prank somebody for so long, or maybe they are a horror enthusiast and, like, they see you trying to scare them, and what if they actually are the killer in the situation or something? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So humans are definitely scary.
It in a way makes me think of the movie Split.
Oh yeah, the split personalities. Yeah.
Yeah, and like that like beast persona thing that he became, and all of a sudden just because his mind believed it and decided to go down that road, he became stronger and just. He was a beast, basically. Like, he was so much less human after the end of that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that was a spoiler alert, by the way. But, yeah. Yeah. But that was... I always thought that was a really cool take on that. So it kind of reminds me of that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's not too far off, actually, yeah. At all. But, and I mean, I have heard other stories of... you know, prisoners and subjects and things like that going through a lot of different experimentations like that. So, like, when I did the Waverly Hill story, you know, they talked about exposing them to certain different things that were considered basically, like, inhuman or mm-hmm. inhumane and things like that. And that's pretty much about as inhumane as it gets.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, even though the story was proven to be not real... I do know that there was a History Channel special on the Russian soldier of Stalin, and they talked about how they actually did stay awake for at least 24 to 48 hours, depending on, you know, the situation of, like, where they needed to be, what they needed to watch. So it's not like, I mean, yeah, 11 days, that seems nuts, but I mean, just staying awake at 48 hours with, you know, no new age medicines and, like, Adderall or anything like that to keep you focused
mm-hmm.
and be able to literally be as silent as, you know, air, basically. It is kind of scary.
Yeah, it's, and I have had times where, for one reason or another, I've actually just gone a couple days without sleep, any kind of sleep at all.
Oh, yeah.
And it is just, it's weird, you know, like you...
Yep.
You, it does really you take a physically toll. And mentally have to recover from it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you actually, you're losing, I forget what the study was. It was you lose a lot of, like, extra oxygen. Mm-hmm. Your blood flow is slowed down to a certain point. Basically, I mean, a lot of the different stuff that could be semi-real in the story, you know, your body is making a change to not having a restoration period.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just on backlog of, like, trying to store every, like, piece of energy you have.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not unheard of to stay awake for multiple days at a time.
But it's not suggested.
It's not suggested, no. I know somebody that actually went 5 days. This is somebody, an actual friend of mine, that went 5 days straight with no sleep. And he swears to God he was seeing all kinds of weird shit.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, he would be out in, like, midday, and he would see, you know, things he would consider be, like, people of the dead or demons or whatever. So, it's just, you know, it's another psychological, like, freak-out thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, hallucinations is one of the things that happens to you when you go for sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
But I was, to circle back to something you said a little bit ago, I was going to say that I know there are... there's, like, documented cases of both American and German studies during World War II about sleep deprivation and like trying. Mm-hmm. I think they were like giving them weird drugs and stuff that they were coming up with to try and make people who could go like a week without sleep or whatever to, you know, make the soldiers all that more terrifying and useful. But those studies usually did not end well.
Right, yeah, I'm sure it ended in obviously sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
Probably loss of fluids and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, so. Best case scenario is the people just crashed and would just sleep for a day or something. But right. I mean, a lot of people, there were people who lost their lives for these studies because they were just brutal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. The world is full of mad people, yeah. That's for sure.
I mean, I don't think anybody ate themselves or anything, but...
Well, no, yeah,
they definitely went through some bad stuff.
I mean, cannibalism is real, obviously, so
yeah.
We've seen that in history, but I think that, yeah, to that level of, like, only keeping certain organs alive just to maintain the gas.
Usually, I have to go to Taco Bell to maintain the gas.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, yeah. But yeah, that's my story.
Yeah, no, it was a good one. I mean, I still think I'm in the lead, but only by like a point or two now.
Well, yeah. I believe it's your turn next week top that.
You know it.
Yep.
Okay, well, is there anything else you want to add to this before we get out of here?
Nope, I just hope everybody enjoys their time by the fire. I know it's getting a little cooler outside, thankfully, finally.
Yeah.
But... you know, next time you experience a chill in the air, make sure it is actually the air.
Bye, everybody.
Have a good night.